But I think when you can stand in your space of like power and say, mira, I work hard, I put this many hours, I gotta pay for this, I gotta pay for that, you know, and I invite people into my space, and I show them, they're like, oh wow, there's a lot that goes into it. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot. You guys see the magic happening on the camera, but there's a whole bunch of shit happening in the background you guys don't see. So there has to be a business mindset to it, you know, there has to be that structure, you know.
This is Studio Confessions, the art podcast. I am your host, Luis Martin, the art engineer. Listen in for conversations with artists and culture makers as we talk about their creative practice and what moves them. Let me share my wax poetic monologues and how to activate your creativity to live an inspired and more beautiful life. That's right, I said beautiful. Welcome to the studio. I'm glad you're here.
Hey, Jackie.
Hi.
How are you?
Pura vida. All good.
I love that. You've been to Costa Rica, I see.
I lived in Costa Rica as well.
Isn't that amazing how that doesn't leave you? You go there once, like for 10 seconds, and it's like pura vida, and you know what it means.
You know what? It didn't leave me, and I didn't leave it. I went on vacation for, like, supposed to be for, like, 2 or 3 months, y me quedé 2 años.
Wow. Yeah. 2 years in Costa Rica. God. So that's why you have that glow, right?
Oh, man, I don't know if it's my glow or if it's because I wash my face or I'm having good coffee. I don't know, mixture of everything.
It sounds like you're living your best life. So
I do my best.
Where are you?
So right now I'm in a suburb right outside of Chicago called Forest Park. Pero literally like 5 minutes down that way and I'm in Chicago.
Awesome.
Technically and Chicago.
You know what's really funny? Everyone always asks me, like, how do you select the people you want to interview? And honestly, mm-hmm. It's just like an energy, right?
Yeah.
And I rarely do research on the people I interview, so I kind of just let it happen organically. And right now, before we came on, I noticed your bio. It said raised in L.A. And I'm like, I'm another Angelino that I just happen to connect with. It's like connects like, right?
Yeah, so it's funny. When I was 2 years old, my mom left to California from Chicago. I was born here in Chicago in a town called Little Village, or La Villita, which is like Little Mexico.
Yeah.
Todo está en español. You could hear gallos. Like, yeah,
wow.
There's people, like, it looks like a tianguis outside sometimes, you know? And it's like being in la Ciudad de Mexico, you know, the way you go down the street and you have fruteros, paleteros, eloteros, everything outside. But she left to L.A., or the San Fernando Valley, actually, when I was about 2 years old. So obviously she took me with her. And I was there till I was about 10, 11, 12 years old around there. But I bounced back and forth between Chicago and California.
What was that like? Because, you know, those years are the years where you're kind of learning things and you get nostalgic for that place in those times.
Let me tell you, I still think about Thrifty's ice cream.
Yes.
I was going to Thrifty's when that was like 50 cents, 75 cents.
I remember that.
And my mom me decía, no me pidas nada o no agarras tu ice cream. So that was like my bribe, right? And I'm a thick little girl. So like, you bribe me with food and yo me comporto. But it was really cool, you know, because I got the mixture of like Thrifty's ice cream and then like the paleteros on 26th Street, which is where Little Village is at, and it's a predominantly Mexican neighborhood. So, you know, being in both places at the same time was really awesome. I got to witness a lot of, like, the Cholo culture in California. You know, my tia dated this Cholo dude, and I remember going to Six Flags in his lowrider. and then what they call, like, the disco bunnies with the copetes all the way up to here. And, you know, Aquanet was a staple of the household with, like, Valentina, you know. So it's, like, it was a mixture of everything, you know, and I'm very nostalgic for that, and it hits home. But yeah, it was good. It was cool. It was interesting.
Yeah. You know? How does it compare? I mean, I know you were a child when you were going back and forth, but how does that culture compare between Chicago and LA? Is the Cholo culture as palpable as it is in LA?
You know what? Yes and no. We had our own, like, so, you know, we had our own game bangers in Chicago. And they dressed very differently, and it was very segregated. Now that I'm older and I could see the difference, where in California, in Southern California, the Cholos were Asian, Black, Latinos.
Ah, wow.
And they all kind of mixed, right? Like, if you were blood, you could be Black and brown. You weren't just brown. Where acá, you know, the gangbangers, all the towns are segregated, even amongst the Mexicans, the Puerto Ricans, the Blacks, the Indian people, the Asians. Like, you have Chinatown over here, but it's super, like, knitted, you know? So now that I'm older, I realize that there's a lot of segregation. But yeah, like, we had our own cholos, but I think it's meshing now, right? Because I think we're realizing that Chicano unity, and how we have to work together, not against each other.
Yeah, totally. And it's so interesting, because I moved to New York when I was 19, and I realized that Chicano thing was a thing, right? Like, it was a fashion thing. Like, people in Japan were dressing like cholos. People in Spain were, like, you know, totally co-opting this, like, Chicano experience for fashion. And, like, it was bizarre.
It's mind-blowing. I remember thinking it was, like, the coolest thing. And anytime I could get my hands on a white hoodie and a pair of, like, Dickies, or, you know, I never owned a pair of Cortezes, you know, like, they were out of reach for me, but, like, I had Adidas, I had Filas, you know. Nikes were too expensive. But, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy now that I see it. It is a total fashion statement.
You want to hear the silliest, stupidest gentrification story you'll ever hear from a Chicano?
What?
I never had Cortezes until I bought a pair at J. Crew.
I'm hanging up right now.
I know. I saw them.
Chicano card away.
It's been revoked many times. But I was like, huh? I was like, okay. At any rate, moving on. So so I stumbled upon you because you go live on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I do that as well, collaging. And oh my goodness, it's such a weird experience. It's like so fun, but it's kind of nerve-wracking, right? Can you tell me how you started?
Man, it all came out of COVID. You know, pre-COVID, I was a teaching artist, which means I worked with two different institutions, and I would either do classes or workshops in Chicago Public Schools, or CPS as we call it here. I did festivals, I did markets, I would do side gigs, you know, a random commission, like maybe once every few months. And then when everything shut down, my contracts ended, you know, I pay my own bills, you know, I survive off of art. You know, so I was like, shit, ¿cómo le voy a hacer? You know, what the fuck am I going to do? And I was like, well, I got to paint. I got to see how I could go online. I got to, like, find a way. And I was like, well, and I thought of Bob Ross. Funny story. I thought of Bob Ross. I love me some Bob Ross. And he was such a cool guy. And I actually have a Bob Ross blanket. And I was like, man, what if I just, like, go live? Fuck it. You know, like, it's, I love watching, like, certain artists do, like, painting strokes, like line strokes, and they focus just on that one particular piece where they're stroking, and I find it to be so therapeutic. And I was like, man, what if I do the same thing? Like, what if I just go online live, and I'm like, hey guys, here I am painting my nopales one night, and a few people joined, and they're like, oh man, that looks really cool. And you know, I was only planning to go live for like 20-30 minutes. I went live for like 5 hours.
What? Wow.
Yeah, because le entré. You know, once I start painting, I don't stop because I'm like inspired. I got my rancheras going. I either got my cup of coffee. I drink a lot of agua de Jamaica. I make my own agua de Jamaica.
Wow.
It's full of antioxidants. Super good for you, especially during COVID right now. You know, you need all the antioxidants and detoxing as you could get.
Yeah, it's hibiscus, right? In English?
Yeah. Hibiscus. Wow. Uh-huh. So I'm either, you know, sipping on something and I have my music going. And yeah, and people tuned in. They're like, man, this is really cool. Are you going to be back on tomorrow? And I'm like, well, might as well. Fuck it. I'm here painting. You know, might as well share space with everybody else. And it was nice because I'm connecting. I'm interacting. And I'm an introverted extrovert, right? So, sure. Like, I don't like being in big crowds unless I'm at a festival and I'm talking about my artwork and I'm in my own little, like, booth. And I see, you know, like, come in. Okay, you could go now. You know, like, I like my space. But yeah, me metí, and it was cool. And so I started doing it. And then I realized, okay, I need a little bit of structure if I'm going to do this. Because right. As artists, we can easily get lost in the process. So I said Monday through Friday. And I would jump between 7 or 8. And I was like, no, I'm going to stick to 8. And then 8 to, I don't know, whatever time I finished. And then it's at 8 to 10. So I created this, like, schedule for myself. And at the beginning of COVID, I was also doing Facebook Live at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, where I was doing more of a paint along for children and families because I work with children.
Wow.
And I thought about all the kids that needed, and that's another thing too, right? I thought about the children that need a creative outlet. And if I can't access them, maybe they can access me. You know, everybody has Facebook. You know, a lot of older people have Facebook instead of Instagram. And so, yeah, I started doing that. And that's when I would do smaller, like 8x10 pieces. And that kind of blew up too, you know, like the kids really enjoyed it. They're all recorded on my Facebook page so people could go back and like, you know, because I paint fast and I do my best to slow down. But, you know, if there's like 20, 30 people watching, you know, I can't go at everybody's rate.
Yeah.
So I save them all and I would tell people, you know, you guys can watch it whatever time. I was asking for donations if they could. If not, that was okay. Because, you know, art supplies is expensive, yes, especially if you're painting on a daily fucking basis.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what a gift that you can share this. Because, you know, I think a lot of artists get in their heads about showing up.
We do.
What was one of those little obstacles that you had to get over to kind of really just show up? You know, to turn on the camera and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. Because for me personally, it was like, I'm just going to get over myself, you know, like,
yeah,
forget the hair, forget the background. I'm just going to do this because I have to. Right.
Yeah.
Was it easy for you to make that transition?
I think it was. It was, yeah, actually like, I didn't have to think twice. I think it's because we have that like hustle mindset, right? For me, it's like, I got to hustle. Yeah. I have no choice. If not, I won't eat. My bills won't get paid, you know? So I didn't even think twice about it, you know? And I just jumped in. I listened to my spirit. My spirit told me, Jackie, go live.
I love that.
You know,
now let me ask you.
That's exactly what I did.
There's a certain level of also business acumen, right? That you need to be like, okay, I'm going to charge this. I need to sell X amount, mm-hmm, of works to be able to keep the lights on.
Absolutely.
Was that an easy transition for you or an operation for you?
Well, as it is, I was already like, I was kind of raised on an entrepreneur mindset.
Nice.
My mom has always had, whether she had a job and her own side business. You know, so I kind of grew up in that, where my mom and my tia used to have, like, I lived in Tennessee as well for like 13, 15 years. And in Tennessee, they had their own translating services.
Wow.
Back when there was no hardly any access or resources for Latinos, maybe like one or two offices, and my mom and my aunt started one. And so, like, I always kind of grew up with that mindset, that business mindset, que tienes que cobrar, you have to make a living, you have to have income coming from different places. But I think having the faith in yourself to actually do it was the hardest part for me. So, yeah, but I was already doing that. I've been a full-time artist for a couple of years now. But definitely, I think that's one of the biggest things. Though, that's why they call us starving artists, because not because we don't want to sell, it's because we don't know how to.
Right.
That's part of it. And the other part is people don't want to pay the artist. But I think when you can stand in your space of like power and say, mira, I work hard. I put this many hours, I got to pay for this, I got to pay for that, you know, and I invite people into my space and I show them, they're like, oh, wow, there's a lot that goes into it. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot. You guys see the magic happening on the camera, but there's a whole bunch of shit happening in the background you guys don't see. So there has to be a business mindset to it. You know, there has to be that structure, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I don't want to be a starving artist. I like to eat, girl.
Heck yeah.
I'm bougie with my food. And I got a dog. I work hard so my dog has a better life.
Well, going back to your aunt and your mom having a service for translation, it almost sounds like you're kind of doing the same thing through your art. You're translating this spirit of like this Mexican culture. Tell me a little bit about the imageries that you use in your work.
So my first form of art was graffiti when I was like 10 years old in Little Village. And there was a lot of gang bangers out there. I was going to join a gang when I was 11.
What stopped you?
So just like my dad, he pulled me out of school. I didn't finish the sixth grade. Because I was 11 years old about to join a gang. And he's like, pulled me right out of school. Wow. Yes. Okay. I went to a Catholic school, but the gang bangers are still in there.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Where did you go? Did you go to public school or did you go to like,
no, it was I went to a mixture of public and Catholic schools.
Okay.
I can't even begin to tell you how many schools I've been to. Like, it's just a blur at this point.
That's amazing.
Pero yeah, so like seeing the graffiti on the walls, you know, I love that. And in Chicago, I don't know about anywhere else, but in Chicago, we have a lot of train tracks. There's a huge train industry here. So wood could easily get stopped for about 10, 15 minutes by like a 2-mile train that's going slow. But the what's it called? The cards have like a bomb on them. The cards have like the graffiti bombs on them. So I remember looking at all of that, and I remember like seeing all of the artwork on there, and nobody really justifying it as art. So that was my first form of art. So I always pay homage to that, you know, like paint splatters, graffiti letters, the old school graffiti letters. I don't do any of that wild style, you know. But and then also growing up Mexican, my dad was more, I don't want to say Americanized because I hate that word, pero, you know, we had some culture in that aspect, you know, where my mom was more like bien rancherota, bien mexicanota. You know, banda was playing in the house all the time, rancheras. My dad would listen to more rock and roll, more boleros. So there was a really fine balance. My parents separated when I was really young. So kind of growing up in two different households, extreme opposites of each other. So seeing the Mexican artwork as a child, the fine lines that you see in the pottery in Puebla, the bright colors that you see in Oaxaca, like all of that, you know. And my dad's from Monterrey, my mom's from El DF. So, you know, just growing up with different aspects of Mexico, the vibrant colors that you see over there, el nopal is huge in what I do. And so for me, I like to play with my artwork, right? I like to call it, it's like Mexican folk art with an urban twist.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Because that's who I am.
Yeah, you know? I love that. And it's really lighthearted. It's really playful. It's very celebratory. And the fact that you let us into watch you making it is like literally magic, you know. I'm really excited by it. I saw on your feed that you took a picture with Astrid Haddad.
Oh my God.
How did that happen? Can you, first of all, tell everyone who she is, because she's not
particularly... Astrid Haddad is the goddesses of goddesses, of chingonas of chingonas. Like, she's like this cabaret performer, theatrical singer. And she's queer. She's a bit older. She's in her 60s, I think, now.
Performance artist.
Performance artist. Like, you name it, that's what she is, right? And I've been a fan for her for a few years now. And I love her because her outfits, she makes herself, right? She's a creative person all the way around. And she sings. Like, one of her greatest inspirations was Lucha Reyes. And to me, mine was, like, I love listening to Lucha Villa. So just a few years after her, you know, and she interprets everything. She mocks religion, culture, machismo, and she does it in such a intelligent, intellectual, artistic, beautiful way. And she's sexy as hell. Like,
talk about being at the center of power, right? Oh, she's kind of like a Cirque du Soleil all in one person, right?
Fuck yeah, man. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then the music aspect of it and the lyrics. But she came to Chicago to... We have a museum here called the National Mexican Art Museum. And there is... what is it called? The Sor Juana Festival that we have here.
Oh, wow.
Which is a celebration of women in general, but Sor Juana being like la chingona de chingones. Because she was, you know, one of the chingones de chingones in Mexico. So she came and she performed. And when I saw that she was going to be here, I was like, I have to go. I have to get my tickets. And I almost didn't make it that day because I confused my days. I'm so bad. If I don't write shit down, nothing happens. If I have no structure, nothing happens. But yeah, I went. And then the guy that puts it together knows that I'm like fangirl of Astrid Haddad. And he told me, he goes, Jackie, go get your stuff and stand in line right here. And I said, well, why? He's like, because when she gets out, she's going to sign discs, like albums, and she's going to sign stuff, and this is where the line starts.
Whoa.
And I know you're a fan, so I want you to be the first one. So she's like happy and excited to meet you. And I'm like, oh my God, I almost cried.
Absolutely. Yeah, isn't that great?
Oh my God, I cheesed out so bad.
Yeah, she's such an archetype of like this, like, empress, right? Like, she's really creative. She's really like you said, she deals with all of the heavy subjects so gracefully.
Yeah, she's amazing. I think one of my favorite things is when she redid the song La Tequilera. That's one of my favorite songs. And she, just the way she does it, the way she interprets it, you know, she's like doing like the self-inflicting pain. She's whipping herself. And then she's walking around with a bottle of tequila and her skirt is a Virgen de Guadalupe. And she's headbanging at the same time. I'm like, who fucking does that? But Astrid Haddad, and how can you not as a creative queer person, how can you not appreciate that? You know, like that's just,
yeah, it's
just wow.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolute magic. Yeah.
Now, oh yeah.
Let me ask you. So, you know, slowly things are opening up. Slowly people are peeking the head out, possibly getting sick again, going back in, going back out. What is your next step for this? If the schools don't open, or if they do open, what are your plans? Like, how do you see what you've done and building up on that? Because I'm sure you've picked up new skills through this going live.
You know what? I have evolved as an artist and developed my skill in the last few months to a point where I didn't think it was possible.
Like how?
You know? My line work has just gotten so much better. The finesse of it. I was always afraid to, like, for instance, I started painting alebrijes. And I was always afraid to do that because, like, they're so intricate. I'm like, oh, I can never do that. And I'm like, tráemelo. You know, like, I want to get even more intricate in it. The talavera pattern that you see in Puebla, that's very intimidating because as simple as it looks, it's very complicated. And if you don't structure it properly, it could look like a hot mess. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, that it's just pottery, but the structure, the dynamics of where they placed everything makes it as beautiful as it is, you know, where you place those colors, the color combination itself, the line work, all of it is very detailed and meticulous. And if you don't do it right, it won't look well. So yeah, just even playing with that, my color combinations, I think have like blossomed. I ventured out of my nopales, you know, but going back to the way things are going to go, I don't know if I could go back to the way things actually were. You know, if people want to hire me to do like workshops y todo eso, okay, but I want to wait just a little bit longer. For now, what I want to do and what I am doing is I am developing a website. I feel like this has given me the opportunity to develop things a little bit more professionally. What else? Like, I feel like found my value now and I step in that.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that because I think a lot of artists, normally the society asks so much of artists, right? You know, to create levity, to create meaning, and mm-hmm. it's not valued in a monetary way, right? It's kind of like, oh, you just have to do it because, and can you do it for free? Because it's, yeah. It means so much to us, right? But not in dollars.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is I've actually worked in construction. My mom and my stepdad have a industrial painting company.
I love your mom. Your mom sounds like a kick-ass lady.
My dad's a really awesome guy too. Okay? I'll talk about him in a little bit. He's a really cool guy too. Pero mi mamá sí es bien chingona. And so I've worked in construction with my dad, my stepdad. And, you know, I can easily go into a place and say, you know, you want your walls painted and prepped? Sure, $2,000. You want a mural? Sure, $2,000. They're more apt to give me the $2,000 to just paint the walls bland and prep it.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Than the mural.
Wow.
Because they feel that art doesn't have that value. Pero bien que les pagan a los albañiles to come and paint their walls and do this and do that. But you can't paint the artist, which by no means am I bringing down their labor or anything, because it's just the same amount of work. But with art, you talk about creativity. You're paying for my experience. You're paying for my creativity. You're paying for my heart and soul. I'm not just putting white or priming your walls. I'm creating a piece of art that came from here and here. Like, how can you even put a value on that, you know?
What a great point.
So,
yeah. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I tell people all the time. You know, don't, you know, you want art? Pay me. You want me to paint your walls white? Pay me too. Which way you want to go? I could do either.
I love that. Oh my God, that's amazing. So you mentioned the I always get stuck on this word. Alebrijes.
Alebrijes.
Alebrijes. You mentioned the alebrijes. Yes. You mentioned the talaveras. So have you been inspired, or are you thinking about going into the third dimension? Because alebrijes are sculptures. Tend to be sculptural.
Alebrijes.
See, you're going to have to write that down for me. So those are usually paper mache sculptures, and the talaveras is pottery. Have you thought about exploring either of those?
I have already. Years before, I did my best. Like, I like, I've done paper mache before. I know how to do paper mache. It's not my favorite. I feel like it's
as an educator, you kind of have to, right?
I do. I have to dabble in everything. Yeah. Right before COVID shut down everything, I taught my students repujado, oh, which is the tin. I wonder if I have an example of it around here. You know, like the tin art that you see in Mexico?
Sure, for the retablos?
No, not necessarily. Okay, imagine like the hearts.
Yes,
I know. The metal hearts, right? Okay, eso es repujado.
Okay.
So it's basically playing with metal, playing with metal sheets or aluminum, wow. right, or tin. I've done paper mache. I've dabbled in clay before. Not like firing the clay, but air dry clay. So I've dabbled in a lot of different multimedia things, but painting is definitely my passion. I prefer painting over all of that. I do want to do a little bit more dimensional work. I love playing with like gesso rolls. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Sure.
I did this really cool piece for an art exhibit called Honor Your Ancestors, and it's a coffin show. They give us mini coffins and we fuck them up our way, you know? And so I did a really cool piece to honor my great-great-grandmother, who was a Nahuatl curandera in Mexico. And it's a skull with flowers, and it has a rebozo around her. But at the bottom of the coffin, I made nopales coming out of it. So I've dabbled in that, and I kind of want to do it here and there. It's just finding the time and making space because it's messy.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, that's a big thing. Living in a city space, yeah. right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do have a decent-sized studio here. It's my home studio. But now that I'm, like, constantly shipping pieces out, I have to have a table dedicated to shipping.
Cool. That's a good problem to have.
It's a great fucking problem to have. It's not even a problem.
Right, exactly. There you go. Reframe that.
Yeah.
Are you an artist or want to be? But can you use a guide, a cheerleader, and a coach? I'm excited to announce that I'm now officially coaching artists. Let's work together on a project-based, result-driven outline to get you into a state of prolific flow. Because artists like us don't seek validation. We create our own opportunities to shine. Go to prolificflow.com and drop me a line. Now is our time. Let's work together.
So you're a queer artist. How does that play out in your work, if any?
So before, I never used to, first of all, the word queer is so new to me. I'm 38 years old, and growing up, the word queer was always a negative word. You know, like, oh, look, it's like saying faggot. You know, it's such a horrible word. And now we've kind of reclaimed it, right? And I even hate having to put a label on my identity, my sexual identity, right? Pero I've learned that identity is such an important thing, and to be visible and to be proud of that, right? And maybe... I always say I want to be the person I wish I had growing up.
That's amazing. Right?
So
yeah.
if I had somebody that, and I did kind of have somebody like that. My tia Adriana, she's a queer or bisexual woman. Pero more, seeing that more on television, on the radio, you know, I would get excited when I heard like rumors that the brat was gay. And I'm like, really? You know? So visibility is definitely important. So for me, now that I'm older, I stand in that space of like, yes, I'm queer. Even on my business card now, I put Chicana queer artist. And I was like, how do I represent that in my artwork? How do I translate being queer and Chicana? And so I'm like, okay, my nopales, I'll do rainbow nopales. Mexican pop culture is big, and so like the conchas. I really don't do a lot of conchas, but I did a rainbow concha, right? And I play with stuff like that. Funny story, my mom calls me her Niña Milagros. It's not a sweet thing at all.
It sounds very sweet.
It's not. There's a brand of tortilla in Chicago called El Milagro. You know where this is going, huh?
Exactly. You're going to have to explain it, but yes.
I will. So, you know, I came out fairly young. I was 14 when I came out. More like I got yanked out of the closet. My dad found a letter to a girlfriend.
Fantastic.
And I got my dad outed me. He's like, so what's going on? Which props to my dad. My dad took it so well.
Wow.
Coming from like a Mexican man, like that was a lot, you know. My dad and my stepmom handled it so well.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
Yeah. I feel so blessed because I didn't have that like shame. Like I think if anything, they were just worried about my safety. Because this was in the 90s, you know. And a woman's safety is super important. But anyways, shit, what was I saying?
La tortillera.
La tortillera. No, you said that. So we're sitting, me and my girlfriend at the time, we're sitting in my mom's kitchen, and my mom walks in, and she's looking at me. Mi mama's bien grosera. This is what I love about my mom and my grandma. And she's like, ay, mija, te voy a llamar mi niña Milagros. And I was like 20, 21. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. But I'm like, why? And she goes, por pinche tortillera. So for those of you who don't know what a tortillera is the equivalent of a dyke in like Mexico City slang. Not all of Mexico knows that, you know? So you have to be from like certain parts of Mexico to get that joke. But to this day, like 18 years later, my mom still calls me her Niña Milagros. And so I love that my dad didn't even joke about it. So he's like, hey, speaking of gay, Jackie, come here. And I'm like, you guys are motherfuckers, but I love it, you know? So it feels good. It's really, really awesome.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always think about, you know, how to show up as a queer person and how it plays out in the work, right? Because... Mm-hmm. I find that the work, I find when you look up queer art, it's always sexual because I guess, you know, that, yes. that's a huge part of it, obviously, but it's not the only
but
part.
But why does it have to be that?
Right.
It's not just that.
It's not just you know? That, right.
That's why I say that may be a sexual identity, but I think being queer, and so for instance, do you know that in indigenous cultures, they didn't call us queer, gay, lesbian, they called us two hearts or two spirits.
Right.
Right. Because we carry the heart of a man and a woman.
Right.
And I have a mentor who's a Native American medicine woman, and I traveled with her for a year. And she taught me about this. She's like, do you know that your people, two-heart people, are masters of everything that they touch? They're magical beings. And if a village saw a two-heart person that had no tribe, they welcomed them in because they were an asset to the community. Because you were valuable.
You're giving me chills.
Because do you realize that children that showed signs of being two hearts were encouraged? If a boy, a male child, wanted to be in the kitchen with all the other women, they didn't shame them. No, by no means. They welcomed them in, and they didn't treat them any different than they would treat a little girl. You know, if a young female, if a young little girl wanted to be out hunting with the men or just being around the men, doing the roles that men did in those days. They didn't sexualize her. They didn't belittle her. They didn't treat her any less than. They made sure they treated her just the same way they would treat a little boy. And not make her feel weak, right? They would encourage it. They would push it. And in Mexico and Oaxaca, you have the mushes,
right.
Their gender. You know, so it's like, it's not about sexuality at all. On the opposite part of it, it's about spirituality, which both go hand in hand. But our spirits are so much more magical. And I feel that people that are queer or two hearts that have been discriminated, that have been outcasted by their family, kind of lose that shine. You know what I mean? And kind of that dim that light within them, and therefore they don't love themselves the way they should. And for those of us who never had to go through that, I had the privilege of not having to deal with any of that. I was able to, like, my wings just blossomed.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know? Yes, I love that. Yeah, I had very similar experiences. Both of my parents were very supportive. But yes, you're right. It's this essence, right? And I think that's the problem, right? Because it's a spiritual thing, we don't have the framework in our society to think about it as a spiritual experience.
It not anymore.
It has to be sexualized with this society that we live in. God, but it's so exciting to think about that and think what moving forward people like you and I can do to do stuff like this for the youth, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And that's the thing too, you know, talking about the youth is, you know, I've talked to like siblings about, you know, hey, Tia Jackie is gay, you know, and I remember having a conversation with another parent and them saying, well, I don't want to have that sex talk. And I'm like, you don't have to have the sex talk. It's not about sex. It's about love. Adults sexualize everything. Children don't. When a child touches their private parts, it's like the same thing as touching their ear.
Right.
There's no difference. It's skin, you know? It's flesh and bone. But adults, we tend to sexualize everything. We tend to demonize everything. So when you want to have these conversations with children, you don't have to talk about sex. You say, you know, Aunt Jackie, Dad Jackie loves, you know, another woman. And that's okay. They're not thinking about how the hell do they have sex. They think about, oh, you could do that? you know, and it'd be so normal. We're the ones that fuck everything up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Well, thinking about spirituality and the archetypes that you use in your work, I see the hearts and I see all this energy and the alebrijes standing right behind you, kind of like a guardian. Yeah. Do you think about spirituality when you're working?
I do. Actually, some of the pieces you don't see here that I've done before are my cactus diosas, my nopal diosas.
Mm.
And I drove from Tennessee to California one time with my mentor. And we passed about 8 to 10 hours of pure desert, you know. And that's something you got to be mentally ready for, because that's a mind fuck and a half.
Wow.
And so the cacti were just standing up there like that, right? And it reminded me of two things, you know. In ancient times, we never prayed kneeling down. Right, that's a very Christian thing. We would always pray standing up, worshiping up. Wow. Right, because of the creator, the moon, the stars, the sun, the todo, you know. And if we did kneel, we would just touch the earth and praise Mother Earth. And so I saw that, and then also the image of the divine feminine, which is a very voluptuous curving woman with her arms up like this, big belly, big breast, big hips, you know, which is a very, very beautiful standard of what a woman looks like. And I was like, man, that looks like the goddess. It looks like a diosa. And so I waited a few years actually before I painted that, but the image always was in here. And so I started painting them, right? And taking on different forms, right? Like I have a painting that I did, my rendition of Kali, which is the Hindu mother goddess. I did a rendition of, who else did I do? The bird goddess, like taking different goddesses throughout history or her story and different cultures, right? And so like eventually I want to do an entire series of my diosas. Alebrijes are also, it's funny, alebrijes are not very old in Mexican folklore. They're more recent, and it was a man, Pedro Linares, I think his name was, in Mexico City. He was really sick, and in his like dream state, while he was sick, he had this dream of like these creatures that had like different body parts of different animals.
Wow.
And they were very intricately painted. And so when he woke up out of it, he started carving them. And then Diego and Frida actually commissioned him for some. And that's how he gained popularity, was through that in like the 40s and the 50s, you know, or 30s. No me acuerdo muy bien. But it's during that time. However, they also translate to Oaxaca, because in Oaxaca, they feel that we have a spirit animal that takes us to the other side, right? So alebrijes are seen as two different things. Mythical creatures created by Pedro Linares, while also indigenous people in Oaxaca that have their spirit guides, you know. But they're two totally different types of alebrijes. What else do I do? I've played with like Aztec imagery before, or indigenous. I don't like to use the word Aztec too much. But like indigenous imagery.
Why don't you like using the word Aztec?
Because I feel like it's combining, and it's too generic, right? So it's like saying Native American. You know, there are so many different tribes in the Aztec and in Aztlan, as they would call it. And so for me, it's like I either Nahuatl or Purichepa or Zapotec. Like, let's name them. Let's stop just generalizing all of them. You know, there's over I think there's over 200 tribes in Mexico, over 200 dialects that are still spoken in Mexico that no one talks about.
Wow.
You know,
do you go to Mexico often?
I don't. I didn't earlier on because my parents never took me, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I was older and I was old enough to travel, I went a couple times. But I think all of this that I do is I educate myself.
Yeah.
I would get books, and this is before the internet, this is before YouTube, you know. I would do my best to look up books, go to the library, read up whatever I could, and then when the internet did come out, I do my own research. I do my best to investigate as best as I can without jeopardizing, you know, or losing the integrity of the culture.
Yeah, it's so important to have that initiative and to encourage that, because it doesn't just happen, right?
You know, it's funny. The reason I do that is, so if you look at me, I'm a white Mexican. Okay, I have green eyes, dirty blonde hair, pale skin, rosy cheeks. You know, I look Polish. You know, I would get confused for a Polish little girl growing up in Chicago. Pero growing up, they would always say, oh, you're not really Mexican. You're a wannabe. You're a poser. You know, ¿qué me decían? Yeah, they would say all kinds of mean things like that, you know? And so I was like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to learn the language. I'm going to learn the culture. I'm going to learn the music, the dance, the food, the art better than all of you. And I did. I taught myself better Spanish. I can read it, write it, speak it. You know, I survived in a Spanish-speaking country working, you know, all day long in Spanish. My culture, I did my best to understand it and know why I have this color skin, while also acknowledging and recently acknowledging my white privilege. But yeah, they pushed me. They pushed me so hard because I got bullied for it. You know, yo bien paisanota, you know, I'm jamming out to like banda machos and shit like that and me rancheras. And they're like, you're not really Mexican. And I never understood that, you know, until I had to really dissect and say, oh, it's soy blanca.
That's fascinating. You know? That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And in your head, what is your go-to place in Mexico?
So we always go to Mexico City first because that's where my tia and my prima are. And I love seeing them. My tia is a very interesting lady out there. She's a dentist, but also learned how to or went to school for like art restoration.
Wow.
She has like an original Diego Rivera in her house.
She's wow.
Like an old one. And she also does, she studies cacti and succulents and nopales in the desert. She hasn't done it in the last few years because of the dangers of the narcos and everything and the kidnapping. But she did that research for over 30 years. And so she's a really interesting lady. She has the dopest molcajete collection I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, those are goals. Those are goals.
Wow.
So we go there first, and then we go to Coyoacan, obviously, because that's where Frida lived. And I remember going to the Blue House for the first time. I cried. And I don't cry in front of people. I cry in the dark, so I don't even see myself. Like, but I cried like a bitch. I cried. It was so like, ay, como no sé. It's like seeing Astrid Haddad, you know? And then from there, we always go to Puebla. My mom is a big fan of Talavera as well. And artesania, my mom's also an artist. She's an artesana. She does a lot of clay work, jewelry. She does some painting. And so we always go there, and I always travel with my mom and my grandma. And then the last time we were there, we went to Michoacán. We were there for Dia de Muertos.
And wow.
That was amazing.
That's on my bucket list, obviously. But oh wow.
You need to go to Pátzcuaro.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, Pátzcuaro, and there's an island in the El Lago de Pátzcuaro que se llama Janitzio, and at the very top is where the cemetery is at. But wow. You also feel like, what's the word to say? I felt like an outsider, like a tourist going there. Because ahí está la gente velando, you know, and
it's a real thing, right?
It's a real thing. They're there with their ancestors and their loved ones, and aquí estamos nosotros fucking taking pictures
for the selfie. Like,
yeah, selfie with the viejito.
Isn't that interesting? You know, I'm thinking about that. Do you think there's anything in our American society, American culture, that's not a selfie opportunity? What do you think is like? I'm just thinking out loud now. I'm like, wow, is there anything that's like super sacred to us? Not really, right?
No, you know what's funny? There's this funny comedian. Her name is Sofia Niño de Rivera, I think. And she's like, she's like, ¿qué pedo? ¿No se han dado cuenta que ya la Virgen de Guadalupe ya no se nos aparece? And she's like, y no se aparece porque ahí estuviéramos nosotras. Una selfie, pero sin luz porque tienes luz propia.
Okay, you're gonna have to translate that. That's hilarious.
So she's like, have you realized that in Mexico, the Virgen de Guadalupe no longer appears to us? She goes, the reason being is because we'd fucking be there with the selfie. She's like, but no flash because you got your own light, you know? And I'm like, man, that is so true. Like nothing, you know? And something I hate to see too is like, they're always posting videos of people dying, you know, very triggering. You know, children being abused, people being abused, nothing's sacred anymore. Yeah. Like we're constantly, and then like people, what I really can't stand is when you do a good deed, but you got to document it, you know, like here, I'm feeding the poor.
You know? No, take the other angle.
Yeah. I'm just like, fuck you. Don't enjoy the fucking moment. Nobody has to know your good deed, but you, as long as you know you did it, ya basta. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's absolutely
and I feel bad. People do that with me sometimes. Like I recently took some paint to one of my friends who's a farmer, And she was at a mercadito, and I was like, oh, her daughter's... Somebody donated me a certain kind of paint that I can't use, the tempera paint,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'm not doing kids' workshops, and I don't want it to dry up. But I know that her daughters like to paint, and I'm sure they could use it, you know. So I took her, you know, 3 botellas de pintura. I was like, here, chica, for your little girls, you know, I know they like to paint. And she's like, oh, my God, let's take a picture with it. And I was like, no, you don't have to, like... I didn't bring it so that you could do that. I'm grateful that you like it y todo, pero... I don't do that for the shout outs and everything.
Sure, yeah, that is,
you know, I do it de buen corazón, not because I want it to be documented. Look what I did. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, wow.
But yeah, no, nothing's fucking sacred in this world anymore.
Apparently not.
Y la Guadalupe.
Yeah, she's a complicated one. Let me ask you to close. What's keeping you inspired right now? What are you reading? What are you listening to? What are you watching?
Oh man. So I'm gonna be really honest. I hate to read.
Yeah, that's cool.
I hate to read.
Can I just point that out though? Like, I haven't laughed this much in a podcast since I've started, and you're really so fucking smart. And it's like, and to hear someone say, I don't like to read, you wouldn't expect that, right? And it's like, you don't have to be smart to read. You know what I mean? Your SAT scores mean absolutely nothing after you've taken them. Yeah. I never took them, by the way. But yeah, absolutely.
Oh no, when I did. And when it came back horrible, I cried. I was like, Mom, I'm never gonna go to college. La, 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 la. Pero fíjate que, yeah, like, so I don't like to read, but when I do read, it has to captivate me from like the first 3 pages. So like one of my favorite authors is Alice Walker. Like I think she's amazing. I like a lot of books in Spanish, but once again I have to be inspired to read it. One of my favorite poets, Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, you know. I won't read the long ass fucking things that she does, but there's some that really captivate me, and you have to be able to understand that because it's like Shakespearean English, but it's Victorian Spanish, you know?
Right, which is heavy.
It's very heavy, and it's a whole other fucking dialect.
Yeah.
You know, the whole vosotros, todo eso. Ale, tío, que no entiendo, you know? But yeah, I watch a little bit of everything. I'm a nerd. I do like sci-fi, so I was watching like Ancient Aliens the other day. But then on the flip side, I'm like, there's this show called Vis a Vis, which is like the Orange is the New Black, but in Spain.
Oh.
So I watch that. I watch a mixture of things. The only thing I can't watch is like scary shit because I'm a bitch. I can't watch anything scary. Like, the extent of my scariness is like Harry Potter and like Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like the newer one. That was fucking demonic.
Yeah, it really was creepy. Yeah, it was very dark. It was very dark. Well, isn't part of some of the Ancient Alien stuff is pretty creepy too?
It's very creepy, but I don't know, for some reason it touches my spirit more.
I know, me too.
And they talk about spirituality and all that. I'm like, okay, this kind of makes sense. You know, I'm not, you know.
Is that the best thing?
I had to stop for a second though. I had to stop because I couldn't sleep. I was like, okay, what if they really are watching?
Yeah, that's the best thing, because you're kind of like, yeah, this kind of makes sense. And then you share it with people and people are like, you're crazy.
They're like, pinche fucking loca. De por si ya estás loca, ahora estás peor.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it'll make it into your work and then it'll you can seal the deal.
Who knows? And then music. So when I paint, I always have to listen to Spanish music, whether it's mainly like rancheras, boleros, trios.
Wait, let me ask you a technical question. You listen to it while you're doing your Instagram live, right? Don't they kick you out for using copyright stuff?
So what happened was, sometimes I don't do it right and sometimes I do. What I learned is that if my music is further away from me and it's pointing towards my AC, it kind of muffles it, but you could still kind of hear it. And then I try to constantly talk so that it doesn't pick it up completely. And I've had people give me tips here and there, and they're like, oh, you shouldn't do Instagram Lives anymore. I'm like, no, but the whole thing is I like that interaction, you know? Pero, yeah.
This is why you talk to artists. This is why, like, thank you for that. Yeah, wow.
Claro.
Because I'm always listening to, like, generic music that is nice and you know, copyright-free, but I want to sing.
Dude, tell me about it. I'm over there like, y volver, volver. Just, like, jamming out, drinking my pepino water, like, you know?
Yeah. I love it.
So that's what I do, and inspiration just comes naturally, you know. Like this week I've been focusing on the Talavera patterns, and just seeing what else I could do. You know, like one thing leads to another. It's like a spider web.
Absolutely.
And I don't really think about what I'm gonna paint that night. because I don't want to stress myself out. I got enough shit to do during the day. So about 20 minutes before, I'm like, all right, cabrona, ¿qué vamos a hacer?
That's fantastic.
What the fuck am I going to do?
That's fantastic. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for spending this time with me and just educating me, really.
Alejandro.
No, I lost it. I'm going to have to tattoo that on my arm. Never mind. I tell you, give me my Chicano card back. Maybe then I can do it. You have a great day and so you good too. Talking to you. We'll connect again soon. Ciao.
Thank you so much. Ciao.
Want to share your thoughts on the conversation? Reach out on Instagram at StuConPodcast or visit the website studioconfessions.com. Follow me and check out my work at Art Engineer. Please leave a review on whichever platform you're listening on. It goes a long way. Thanks for listening. If you heard anything that moved you, please share it. You are the spark that can ignite 1,000 flames. I am Luis Martin, the Art Engineer, sharing with you what moves me. Thank you.